TGS of 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Nika, nanantuapte, tatyong. Nalilong, ispantatamip. Napwehat. Sipo maluatok. Napagatan tatliyong. Kwahagwan nanugot. Nakso nanugot.
Heyo. Heyo. Teachings in the Air with Sahil Thit. Today's podcast is called Free Sahil Thit. Liberate Sahil Thit. You know, and it's about my mental health journey in Canada. You know, as stated before in other podcasts, you know, I come from my early childhood. I was raised in a safe, inclusive environment. My parents were wonderful parents and made sure I was fed, clean, disciplined, taught how to be part of by doing chores with my brothers, you know, packing wood, packing water, cutting wood, you know, being part of our life in the home. I remember my first responsibility in our home was the fire starter in the wintertime. And my dad gave me that job. And we had two stoves. One was what they call a heater, which would be the one that warms the house. Then there's a cook stove, is also used wood that my mother would cook on. You know, that was our... So in the morning, you know, the night the fire would go out. So I thought I have kindling, fire starter, you know, to start the fire in the morning. And I remember just telling you this history of Sahil Thit. I'd be laying in my bed, you know, and I'd hear my late father, Jerry Spamsham, which means Jerry, go start the fire. And I'd lay there and he'd say it again. By a third time, his voice would change and I knew, oh, he knows I'm awake. So I'd jump up and I'd run downstairs and start the fire. I didn't know then I was helping the family or anything. It was a job that my father gave me. So that is my first responsibility. I was able to respond. I was able to do that, to strike a match and start the fire. As the fire grew, I'd add bigger pieces of wood. And once going good, I'd run back to bed. So that, you know, as a baby, we're all in a pure state, pure human beings. You know, and I was pure. I didn't have any anger in me or resentment or the mental health issues of today. And usually those are based on anger, fear, or depression. I didn't have that as a baby. And as a young infant, you know, right until 5 years old, it was basically a pure human being. No fear, you know, I was well fed, like I was saying, and it was healthy. So in my mental health journey, a sudden, I experienced trauma. And it is in the Canadian system of education, the elementary school, where I first started to know fear, shame, you know, but from making a mistake. I'd make a mistake in my arithmetic and I get slapped around the face and the ears, you know, and there's violence. And that first negative physical experience for Sahilthit molded my life for a good many years until I achieved healing and could purify myself from that experience. I became, from that physical violence, then there was verbal violence happening at the same time in Canada. And I would hear as a child that we were stupid Indians, we're lazy, we're crazy, we're drunken. And I would hear these descriptions of myself and my family and all Indigenous people. And of course that had impact on me as well. It started then where I needed help with mental health. I started to feel that I'm not good enough, to feel worthless as a child. As I grew, I started to feel like a failure. And that brings problems when you, anyone thinks there's a failure, that they're not good enough and that they don't belong, I don't belong. So that first feeling of insecurity, low self-esteem, which means I didn't value myself, that I didn't feel that I had a right, you know, to be me. So I started to, you know, when that verbal violence is based on racism, and it created identity issues for Sahilthit. First off, I'm not Indigenous enough, that I'm not truly an Indigenous person because I do not speak the language or know traditional music or dance or ceremony and ritual. That I'm not Indigenous. I actually heard when I was young, you know, a young teenager, that I was an Apple Indian, which means red on the outside and white on the inside. And of course that hurt my feelings. And because of that, I started to lose focus. I started to be confused with my identity. And you know, oddly enough, maybe it's not so odd, it was intentional, I internalized the created identity for all Indigenous people. There was an identity created for us that were inferior, that our ways of life were inferior to this European-based way of life, that there's something wrong with us. You call that pathologizing, that we're all got mental health problems, we're stupid, we're crazy, all of those that created identity. You know, to be young and to feel shame and confusion. You don't, I didn't even feel angry yet. I was just so, I'd be ashamed. And that's a bad place to be for anyone. You know, this created identity raised havoc with my self-worth, my desire to have a life. You know, when we're victims, when I was was a victim of that created identity. The victim. I said victim of that created identity. The victim, actually, the true meaning of victim was the sacrificial animal, usually a lamb, a young sheep. In the Middle East, you know, with those ones, they'd sacrifice animals to God. And when I found out, I said, what am I a sacrifice for if I'm a victim? And of course, it's to put us down as indigenous people so that the land can be taken, the resources, the trees, the gold, the water, the farmland, everything on the land. So when I became a victim, all victims from trauma, and trauma means to be wounded, they become angry, depressed, and anxious. Anxious means they're afraid. Did Sahilthit become angry? Of course I became angry. But I became angry at the church, the government. That's who I was angry with. And it, you know, and I've thought about this for years. Like, for instance, the word government. Actually, government is made up of all elected officials. So government on its own doesn't have feelings. You know, it's the people that are elected that have the feelings. And obviously their feelings were not aimed at positively at indigenous people. We were called the Indian problem. And of course I heard that as a child too. I'm a problem. My people are a problem. And that impacted me at a very serious, deep level. To grow up thinking you're a problem as a child, because as children we absorb whatever's coming at us, we take it in. We don't question, I didn't question it. Took it in. And I believed there was something wrong with me. There's something wrong with Sahilthit. Because I'm depressed, I'm angry, I'm afraid. So, as any human being, when you're troubled, or you feel like you're in trouble, there's problems, and you don't know what to do, that you look for something to help you. And it was so unfortunate that what I turned to was alcohol and drugs to help me forget, to help me feel good. Because you know how it is, all those of you that have drank alcohol, that you have the first few drinks and you start to relax. I knew that from experience. I'd be depressed and I'd go to the beer parlor and have a glass of beer, and after two I'd be feeling all right, no more problems. Which was a lie, the problems were still there. So I became addicted. You know, I'm thinking negative about myself, about my people. In a sense, I became a quitter. I quit trying to be successful. I became what I was thinking. Attitude means you're talking and acting the way you think, what you believe. So I was listening to, I'll say society, saying there's something wrong with those indigenous people. And I was processing that, taking it in, and I became what I was thinking. I became negative, I became drunk, I became angry. So, like many, and this is the good news, this is about liberation, this is about freedom. You know, that I started to free myself of that negativity. I started to change. I became hungry for healing. And as I was thinking of this freedom and liberation, I thought, okay, what's the requirements to do this? To go on to the healing road? To become purposeful, to become part of? And I thought, well, the first thing is to commit, make a commitment that I want to change. I'm tired of, sick and tired of this negative life. I'm not happy the way I'm living. So to make that commitment, I'm going to change. So that's the first, that's what happened to Sahil. I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and then I made a commitment. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop doing drugs. That is my commitment. Which, when I look back, that was the easy part. Because it simply means I did not pick up the bottle anymore. Because I was picking up the bottle. I was taking the drugs. So when I made the commitment, I'm not going to do this, I could do that. Then, I don't know how many years, I said, I'm going to quit. But I keep going back. I'd fall off the wagon and I'd start drinking and doing drugs, you know. So it became like a cycle thing. The requirement that was missing for me after my commitment was to confess to others, to admit to others I have a problem. My life is unmanageable with alcohol. As soon as I said the words, my name is Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, I confessed to people. I acknowledged that I have problems. As soon as I'd done that, my commitment became stronger to change, to stop. But I had to admit to other human beings that I have a problem, I have problems. And that was, I remember when I admitted to people, my name is Jerry and I'm an alcoholic. It's just like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. And I look back, it was actually silly that I was walking around not pretending I wasn't an alcoholic, because it was so obvious. When I drink, I would black out, you know, my nose would get red, you know, and I wouldn't know what I was doing. And it was like that every time I drank. End up being picked up for drunkenness and go to the drunk tank, you know, and, you know, so. And I look back, I just sort of laughed there. Because I was thinking how crazy that was for me to have a hard time to confess, because it's so obvious to others Jerry's got a problem. So I was in denial that I had a problem. But soon as I broke that and I told people I'm an alcoholic, my change, my power to change became stronger. And then I could start to collaborate or work with others with the same problem, to start to go connect with cultural people that were doing ceremony. I started to socialize with people that were sober. I go to sober dances and I'd have such fun there. It was so, you know. Because I used to go to dances and we wouldn't start dancing until we were drunk. And I went to a sober dance, everybody's dancing and I'm watching and I go, whoa, hey, I can do that too. And I'd start. So I started to socialize and mix with people that had stopped drinking and doing drugs. And a lot of them weren't Alcoholics Anonymous, but a lot of them were cultural people too, traditionalists. You know, they were doing ceremony, harvesting medicine, singing, hand drumming, powwowing. I started to collaborate with them, to reach out to them and be with them. And that's a big part of my saving grace, you know, that I'm still here today. And the other part of this requirement to change, to heal, is to be consistent. So I would go consistently to start to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Then I started to be consistent with ceremony, using medicines like smudge, chewing on roots, going to a sweat lodge, bathing in the cold water consistently, day after day. And I started to become stronger, easier to say no to someone and say, hey, Jerry, let's go drink. Are you going to do some drugs? You know, and I'd say, no, I'm not that way anymore. Became easier. So those are the requirements. Commitment to confess, to collaborate, to be consistent. It became my lifestyle. And that's what you're after, is to change a lifestyle, to be positive. To be able to do this, I had liberators, freedom fighters, people that helped me to be free. And the ones, when I look back on it and I remember, the first one was what I call tough love relative. You know, it was actually my late mother. I got arrested for stealing alcohol. And I was in jail. My late mother and father come to liberate me, free me from the jail cell. And I remember I was talking to my mother, my late mother, and I told her, Mom, I'm so ashamed of myself. And she looks at me and she says, Son, you're ashamed of yourself. You know what they're saying out there in our community? They're not talking about you, Jerry. They're saying Pat and Martina's son's in jail for stealing alcohol. It's just like first time I could see the results of my actions from those words. How I impacted other human beings and my parents who I loved. Because I was just thinking about myself. So that is a big lesson for me. And I said, I'm never going to steal again. And I haven't. And then from there, I stopped the alcohol and drugs. There were other relatives that would tell me to smarten up because they loved me. They cared about me. They would make suggestions. Some of my uncles, some of my cousins. Then, of course, I had teachers in my life, and those were the elders and knowledge keepers that would teach me. They're not teaching me about alcohol and drugs, but about how to heal myself. Oh, I'm just so thankful I had one teach me how to build a sweat lodge. That to use it, to purify myself, to strengthen myself, to cleanse myself. I'm so lucky to have that. Or to talk to me about going early in the morning to go bathe in the cold water, to give myself to the water, to strengthen myself. Because, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to do that. I didn't like it. I didn't like getting into the cold water. My feet and hands would be cold, you know, it felt miserable, but I committed that I'm going to do this. Thank goodness I made that commitment. Every day, all year long, I go bathing in the cold water. And I'm thankful for this. What got me into it was my cousin, my uncle's son, said, Jerry, you do it, I'll do it. That's the one case where I used to wish people quit drinking with me. But of course, nobody would, seems like it. But my cousin said, I'll join you with this ceremony, which is cold water bathing. He says, we don't have to do it together. We'll just go do it. I says, okay. So I'd start, and I'd go down, and I'd get in the cold water. And the only way we knew we were both still doing it, because we go to the same place, but we go at different times, was when it started snowing. Sometimes I'd be a little late, and I'd go down, and I could see his footprints in the snow going into the lake. And sometimes he'd see my footprints going into the snow. So he and I started using that medicine, and I believe it's helped me so much with my willpower, strengthened my will to stay on this path. Not drinking, not being negative, you know, because I would go in. And I started to talk to the water because they instructed us to talk to the water. And it took me a while to listen to that teaching, but I started saying, water, I need help. I'm giving myself to you. And cold water bathing became enjoyable after that. I'd feel awake. I'd feel connected. I'd feel alert going into that cold water. And I started to stay in there longer and enjoy this experience. You know, and other knowledge keepers taught me, like I was saying, about the sweat lodge. And my late mother told me how to make the fire, and she says, only thing I'm going to tell you, son, is you make those rocks red. You make it hot in there. And of course, you put the medicines on there and do those things. So I started to do that. My ears and toes would burn in there, you know, and it's hot, you know, and I just keep at it. Go in the water after, come back in, you know. And that helped my willpower too. Because that teaching, make it hot, son. She says, so hot when you go out in the cold water, you don't feel the water for a while. So I followed that teaching. And the combination of the medicines and the prayers and the songs, because I started to sing songs in there, helped me to look at myself, to change myself, to get new ideas, to get new thoughts about how to live. That come from the knowledge keepers, the ones that kept the sweat lodge alive, the benefits of cold water bathing, using medicines to clear myself, to cleanse myself, to strengthen myself. Because I just smell, for instance, sweetgrass. I just light it, and immediately, as soon as I smell it, I start to feel positive. More positive. I'm usually a positive guy, but when I smell the sweetgrass, well, it even strengthens it. Or the sage, the cedar, and the juniper, when I burn it, I can feel it. It's doing something to me. It's strengthening me. It's cleansing me. So I learned that from the knowledge keepers, the healers, that were doing the ceremonies. We go in and they would talk to us. The elder in the sweat lodge, oh, I thank you for coming.